Devalagalikal, book 6, chapter 19. Okay, so start with Wiri, so the husbands. Quantus pecunias, how ever great the money, or monies, acciperunt, they've received, ab uxoribus, from their wives, dotis nomine, with, or in the name of dowry, communicant, they join, ex suis bonis, from their own goods, tantas, so great as monies, so meaning the same amount of monies, cum dotibus, with the dowries, estimatione facta, with an estimate having been made, huius omnis pecuniae, of all this money, ratio habetur, an account is kept, or it's held, conjunctum, jointly, fructisque servantur, and the fruits, meaning the profits, are saved. Utor eorum, which of the two of them, vitae superarit, in respect to life, will have survived. So whoever is the last one living. Ad eum pars utrius quae, to that person, the share of each of them, cum fructibus superiorum temporum, along with the profits of earlier times, pervenit, passes. Viri in uxore sicut liberos habet potestatem. So the men towards the wives, just as towards the children, have the power, vitae necisque, of life and death. Et cum pater familiae, when the father of a family, natus illustriore loco, having been born in a rather honorable position, meaning his social status, decesit, has died, eius propinqui conveniunt, his relatives assemble. Et de morte, and concerning the death, si res in suspicione venit, if the matter of the circumstances have come into doubt, habent questionem, they have an inquiry, de uxoribus, of the wives, in servile modem, according to the slave method, which means under torture. Et si compertum est, and if it has been ascertained, so if proof's been obtained and they know that they killed him, interficiunt, they kill, and doesn't say, but it's really uxores, the wives, ex crucitas, having been tortured, igni atque omnibus tormentis, having been tortured with fire and with all instruments of torture. Okay, so this passage here definitely tells us that the women, despite equal financial contributions to the family resources, were not full partners. Caesar is implying an incentive that the wives would have for murdering their husbands that could possibly lead to inquiries later. And I think I can probably see that the families of the deceased husband might have a financial incentive also for conducting an inquiry. In all this marriage stuff, what were some of the purposes for marriage in the ancient world? And like we said in class, they did not contain romance or finding your soulmate. And really, we've got the connection back to the Aeneid. They're talking about marriages here, and you kind of get Caesar's remarks about the Gauls. Then we have Virgil's descriptions of Aeneas's two marriages, his marriage to Creusa, his marriage to Lavinia, his non-marriage to Dido. And kind of tells us a little bit about the Roman thinking about the economic, the political, the social purposes for marriage. All right, moving to the last part. Funera sunt, so the funerals are, pro cultu Gallorum, considering the culture of the Gauls, considering the civilization of the Gauls, magnifica et sumptuosa. They were grandiose, they were magnificent and costly. Inferunt in ignem, they cast into the fire, or they convey into the fire, omnia, all things, quae arbitrantur, which they consider, fuisi, were cordi, to the heart, meaning dear, vivus, for the living person, okay? So when they were alive. Etiam animalia, even animals, a palus supra hunc memoriam, and a little beyond this memory, so a little before the memory right now, servi et clientes, slaves and dependents, quos constabat, which it was well known, which was established, delectus esse to have been loved, ab eis, by them. Justus funeribus confectus, and with proper funeral rites having been completed, una cremabantur, they were burned together with them. All right, so this is definitely interesting, but you got the upper class ancient Gauls considering a lavish funeral important. Why do you think that is? And what does their interest in taking people, pets, possessions with them into the next world imply about their conception of life after death? Of course, upper class Romans conducted really ostentatious funerals as well, and you know, kind of there was a value of showy funerals to Roman politicians. And, you know, Caesar, again, is basically alleging that the Gauls practiced human sacrifice and, you know, formerly, kind of before living memory, in an even more barbaric fashion than their current practices. And, you know, it's just kind of a rhetorical effect of this repetition that would really drive it home with his readers. I think you also have to remember that Roman gladiatorial combats began as funeral games, and so what does that imply about Roman customs? Would Caesar's readers have found that ironic? Probably not. And I think that in the Aeneid, we really get kind of an understanding of the importance of funeral rites. We've got the cases of Anchises and Palinurus, and you got the rites that are performed on both, and just, you know, the impact of the funeral rites on the fate of each in the underworld. And so, you know, you've got this portrait that kind of emerges from those that we can compare with the Gallic funeral practices that Caesar's describing. So we'll try to get into all of that and some of those essential questions about how Virgil and how Caesar really do connect. All right, and that is the end of chapter 19.